Right, well, but we are back here to record episode 5, Broken Mirror. Right, we're back. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Eve. Nice to speak to you. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Nice to speak to you, as always. We've had quite a nice weekend.
We've had a lovely weekend. I know, I said nice to speak to you, nice to see you, as if I haven't been with you for 2 days.
Yeah, two straight days. Love you arrived 48 hours ago with a suitcase. in your bedroom, which I swear I did intend to make your bed into a lovely bedroom setup.
That's fine. But
every other guest, well, I shouldn't.
I just get to sleep in the dog bed. So.
I really shouldn't tell you this. Basically, every other guest but you gets a full house clean and a bedroom with rolled up towels on the end of it.
All right. I thought you were going to say every other guest gets the bed put up. And I was like, look, that's absolutely fine. It makes no difference to me if the bed is up or if the mattress is on the floor. I do get the mattress, I don't get the dog bed, just for everyone to know. But I am genuinely now...
I know.
Pissed off, frustrated, and a little bit upset that this house was not sparkling when I arrived. And I don't want any excuses about work.
Yeah. That's fair.
And that I didn't have rolled up towels.
I know. A little chocolate on the pillow. Just anything would be nice.
Why the fuck are you rolling up towels for your guest?
I like to be fancy. I'm trying to emulate my Aunt Judith, shout out, who is the best host. And it was just always a dream going to her house. And I want to be that person.
Well, I wish I could experience Aunt Judith's hospitality.
You're not getting it here, love.
I'll tell you what, if my sister ever tells me that she had rolled up towels on the bottom of the freshly made bed, I had to put my own sheets on the bed.
Yeah, I know. I'm so sorry. I will step up my game.
Take that mattress out of its black bag.
You literally walked in. You were just in a shitty spare room and you were like, guess I'm putting this mattress out on the floor for myself. I'm so sorry. So sorry. But yeah, no, we've had a lovely weekend.
Yeah,
we've done two long dog walks. I got a dog, which is very
exciting. A dog. Big day.
Claire has a
surrogate dog.
A rental dog.
I don't even pay for him, eh?
You get paid to have it.
Not often.
No, but she's your little buddy.
She's my little pal, wherever she is. Currently cuddling up to you, I think.
She's not cuddling, but she is at my feet. Yeah. So we've got Isla, who's my new rescue dog, and Jess, who's the surrogate dog.
Yeah.
And they are currently sitting quietly in the room.
We'll see what happens. Jess has a tendency to start shouting when we laugh.
She's a little shouty. But so far, so good. I mean, yeah. But if
she's been very calm this afternoon since we got back, actually.
If the granddad laugh comes out, you never know. She might freak out. But they've had a nice long walk, so hopefully they'll be chill.
Sleepy.
Mm-hmm. Right, well, but we are back here to record episode 5 of Behind the Criminal Minds.
Whoop whoop.
So yeah, I've done the rewatch, and it's episode Broken Mirror. Season 1, episode 5, Broken Mirror.
Well done.
Thank you, wrote it down. I won't make that mistake. So should I kick us off?
Yeah,
should we jump
get started.
In?
Let's
dive
jump
right
straight
in. So we open, this was a little break from tradition of the show. We open on a house party scene and there's a couple kind of spilling out of the door. We don't get a location. Normally they've written, you know, like Seattle, Washington along the bottom. So on the third watch, I was like, okay, I need to, because I wrote XX house party because I was like, I need to write the location. Didn't know it. They didn't write anything on the screen, which surprised me.
That is surprising, actually. I did not notice that tidbit. I guess that's not my job to look for those things in the episode. But
no, genuinely, they didn't
you're
do it.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
They didn't do it at any point. So they didn't write like BAU Virginia. But then maybe they're just like, we don't need to write that every time. So maybe they've just given up.
You know what? It is the fifth episode.
Yeah.
And I feel like in these shows, they're all still trying to find their feet, aren't they? And yeah. just because it's the fifth episode aired does not mean that it was the fifth episode that was recorded and edited. Mm. They often change up the order in the first episodes, don't they?
What do you mean? How do you know that? What, just in general? In general, TV shows?
TV shows, yeah. And you can see it like in some shows. I'm not going to have a single example come to mind. but where they... There's sometimes in the first season of shows, there'll be like storyline inconsistencies and you'll like hear about something. It'll be something really minor, but you'll hear about it in like episode two, but then the storyline won't start till like episode five.
Okay, interesting. The only reason I think that perhaps they haven't done that is that, well, because I'm very aware of the character development and I've been making my profiles, they are like drip feeding the information, and so I feel like that seems quite considered in like how much we learn each episode.
Yeah,
so it's kind of ramping up.
Yeah,
I feel ramping up to stuff.
Yeah,
but you could be right.
I was just speculating only because, and I hadn't even considered that until you mentioned that they didn't have the
yeah,
the
but you could be right because there so far isn't a sort of overarching storyline. No. There was with Gideon's PTSD, but then they got rid of that in like episode two.
Yeah.
so there isn't an overarching storyline, so they could quite easily be cutting it up. But anyway, yes, so we open on a house party. I don't know where it is, and there is a couple kind of spilling out of the house party. He starts to tell her that he loves her, but she says that he's drunk, and he's only saying that because he's drunk. He tries to go to drive, but she says that she wants to be the one to drive because he's buzzed. Love the word buzzed. We don't use that word here.
No, you're but we buzzed. Will use absolutely every other word.
Shit-faced.
Trolley.
I literally can't think of any other words.
Oh my God. Smashed. You can say anything if you're a British person. That can
yeah.
Mate, I was out of the pub the other night and I got absolutely vacuumed.
I like shit-canned.
Shit canned. There's just so much. It doesn't matter what you say, and it can mean drunk.
But yeah, buzzed. I haven't often used the word buzzed. Got a little buzzed. But yeah, so she tries to give him a sobriety test, and he kind of like kisses her. They're actually quite cute. I thought this could be a bit cringe. Like, there's been a few these kind of like victim characters. Sometimes it can be a little bit overacted. Mm. But I actually thought these two, I believed in their love.
Oh, you that's know? Nice. They did a good job.
Yeah, they did a good job. So yeah, not too cheesy. But eventually she lets him drive, which I think maybe that was a bad idea.
Such a mistake. He did not prove to me that he was sober enough
but
for driving.
Drunk driving, you know, I don't want to like generalize, but I think it's like quite common in North America. Like I once went to the, I am not going to name this person, but I once went for wine after work when I lived in Canada with a girl I worked with, and we shared a bottle of wine and ate like a few nibbles, did not have a meal. And then I was like, oh, how are you getting home? She was like, oh, I'm going to drive, but it's just a straight line. And I was like, bitch, you are drunk. Like, I feel drunk. I wouldn't drive. Yeah. So you are, it was, I was like, okay,
mate,
whatever.
Go to Australia. There is no such thing as sober driving.
I think just like, people just don't take public transport or taxis anyway, or walk anywhere. Anyway, whatever.
When I lived in Canada with my ex, he would literally drive us to, like, it was minus 40 degrees, but it was maximum a 10-minute walk down a straight road from his flat to this pub that we would go to, and then he would be drinking, like we'd drink there all evening, and he would drive us
home. It's just crazy.
And I'm like, that's madness, but also what a dumb bitch am I that I was getting in that car. I think there was a couple of times where I didn't get in the car and I was just like, oh no, I quite like the fresh air, like after I've been drinking that much, because we were then going home to go to another pub.
I know, but it's like, how you can't, when it's so ingrained and it's just like that's what everyone does, I don't know how you talk people out of it.
So here's the answer.
Yeah.
Anyway, here we don't drink and drive.
Yeah. Well, we do our best. I genuinely would never drink and drive. So anyway, yeah. So she lets him drive. They're driving along, and he's doing that thing that they always do on TV, where he's looking at her a lot. But thankfully, she keeps telling him to look at the road, because that's what I'm always thinking in TV shows when they're like talking to the other person and not looking straight ahead. I'm like, look at the fucking road. But then suddenly they skid to a stop because there's just a truck stopped right in the middle of the road. It's got like hay bales in the truck bed. And so they stop the car, he turns off the engine, and they get out. But when they get out, I'm like, there is enough space to go around that 100%. Truck.
I was like, yeah, but I think, aren't they saying, like, they're wondering, A, why he's there? Because he is, like, right in the middle of their side of the road.
Yes, but
and there's no hazards on.
He doesn't have hazards on, but then they insinuate that they can't get around him because she's like, let's just turn around. So they're pretending, well, it seems like they can't get around this truck, but they definitely could. But yeah, they get out of the car. I mean, you'd beep your horn, you'd try a few things before you actually got out of the car. He goes to look in the window, but he can't see anything, and she starts to get nervous, which is the correct reaction, mm-hmm. because you're entering a horror movie scenario. She suggests that they turn around. It's like, just drive around the fucking car. Then they go to get back in the car, and the keys that he left in the engine are gone. So I'm confused as to why he even turned the engine off in the first place, because you just leave the car idling. Even if you say you were going to get out of the car, you just leave the car running and then get out. But anyway, he turned off the engine, left the keys in the ignition, but the keys are gone. So they start to search for the keys, and then it's the classic horror movie thing. She looks up, she sees something behind him, and
sorry to interrupt.
mid-flow.
Could have waited 10 more seconds. I don't know if you clocked this, was the driver's side window open?
No, of the truck?
No, the car. The reason I ask is because it's just a thing. If the keys were gone, he would have had to open the door and shut the door again if that window wasn't open.
I think it has to have been because she looks up and there's a gun pointed at his head, and I think it's being pointed through the window.
So it must have already been open.
Yeah, so his window has to have been open.
Yeah.
But I didn't clock that earlier. So then looking at the outside of the car, we see that a shot is fired, but we don't see who gets killed, if anyone. So then we cut to the BAU. Morgan and Reed are walking along, and Morgan asks Reed how the Redskins game went with JJ. but Reed says it's top secret. So there's a bit of continuity, because that mm-hmm. was in the last episode.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Then a female agent comes over, and she kind of has a little flirty moment with Morgan. And Reed points out that women basically throw themselves at Morgan. But Morgan says that he doesn't mess with any woman that carries a gun, which is like quite a cute little tidbit. I like that. Then we see Hotch on the phone to his wife, who's on bed rest for 6 weeks.
That is utterly ridiculous. Like, what is wrong with that pregnancy?
I know. Like, I know he, like, lists that. He says, like, preeclampsia, which I'm not...
I don't know what that is.
I think that might be, like, premature contractions.
I honestly couldn't tell.
That, I actually...
Without
Scrap
Googling
that.
It.
That's bullshit. I have no idea. But she doesn't look that pregnant.
Hicks.
Oh, yeah, correct. Preeclampsia. He said something about high blood pressure. So, listen, I'm not a doctor.
Nope.
But yeah, on bed rest for 6 weeks. Oh, my God, you'd be so fucking bored. But he seems like genuinely worried. His little eyebrows are pushed together, which suggests that this robot has feelings. He's worried about his wife.
He's starting to see some hot emotion.
Yeah, he's showing some emotion. So yeah, he seems very worried. Then they all kind of converge, and they're discussing the kidnapping. So we've realised that the girl is at least still alive because she's been kidnapped. There's a ransom letter. There's a lot of reads in this episode. So Reed reads out the ransom letter. That's like a tongue twister. And he says that they were written by the girl who was kidnapped and like dictated by the kidnapper. They say that her name is Patricia. Hotch says that they have 9 hours to get to Connecticut because they're expecting a ransom phone call from the killer. The father is. Morgan notes that the ransom letters all begin with the word you. So he's kind of trying to distance himself. So he's not saying I want. He's saying you will. Mm-hmm. Then Hotch points out that the letters don't mention the police, which is like quite common in ransom letters to be like, don't involve the police. So they speculate that it means that this kidnapper is expecting the police to get involved. Okay, so then we cut to the Concorde. The team are discussing, this is why they have their little like meetings en route. I guess they have to because they don't have a lot of time.
Yeah.
The team are discussing the father of the kidnapped girl. And honestly, this is where I had to pause it because they were like, he's a US attorney, blah, blah, blah. And then they said all this stuff and I didn't write it all down. basically, he's a US attorney and he has received lots of death threats in the past, which means that the family have been given protection before. But Patricia has declined. She declined protection. I can't fucking talk. Right. Oh my God.
Have a drink.
Jesus, guys, I do, yeah, okay.
I think that'll make it worse.
I honestly can't, like, tip of the tongue, teeth in the lips. Okay, red leather, yellow leather. Okay, Patricia declined protection when she turned 18. That's what I was trying to say.
I enjoyed that.
But they say that when she was kidnapped, her boyfriend was killed, which is a bit sad, actually.
Yeah, it's really sad.
So Morgan points out that she has a sister and Reed says that they're actually identical twins, not just sisters. So they arrive at the family home. The dad is understandably very flustered. He's panicking. There's lots of people there, like other FBI agents, and he explains that all of his staff have been vetted. Gideon here refers to Reed as Dr. Reed. We didn't know. I mean, I could imagine he had a PhD, but I don't think I like necessarily knew that he was Dr. Reed. It's the first time they refer to him as such.
100%.
Yeah. Mate, I'm writing it down. I put it in my profile.
But in my mind, I'm like, we've definitely done that.
No, he's always just been Reed. Don't Google it now.
I'm not Googling. I'm Googling it. I'm just... Yeah, anyway, carry on.
Yeah.
So first time we hear him as Dr. Reed.
Yeah, he refers to him as Dr. Reed. And I was like, oh, good for you, girl. So then... Reed says that, like, the statistics say that if they pay the ransom, then Patricia will be returned. Gideon thinks that the kidnapper is angry at this father, and that this is the bit where he's, like, talking about the unsub, and he's, like, he's jealous of everything you have, and then he, like, looks over his shoulder, and there's, like, a montage of, like, the guy's house or something. They do these kind of, like, cheesy montage of things. And previously they've done it when they've been profiling the unsub.
Yes.
And it's like, you see this and you see a map and you see the crime scene. This was like I wasn't a fan of this particular moment because Gideon just looks over his shoulder and it's like, image. And then Hotch says something else and it's like, image. And then that's the extent of it. And I was like, it just kind of, it took me out of it for a second.
Yeah, okay.
I have to say, love this episode.
Good.
Yeah,
okay. I wasn't sure when I could ask you.
Yeah, no, I was like the whole, I was like,
this episode.
This one I was like, shit, yes, we're back to episode one vibes. Like I was really into the whole, the premise of it, the victims, the storyline, the like, is that bad? Because I'm like, I like the, I'm so far
that's
I've fun. Liked
why
the
we watch crime shows Eve.
The two kidnapping storylines. I don't know, I guess it was just like empathizing with the victims more this one. I don't know,
because you're an identical twin.
Sure, yeah. I'm a mirror twin.
I honestly think there's gonna be, well, that's why we're doing the podcast, but there'll be more episodes that you like than episodes you don't.
Yeah.
So no. I know there was a couple of weak ones at the start of the season that, no, I'm glad you like this one. This one I really find this one interesting.
Yeah, back to full strength. I really liked this.
Yeah.
So yeah, but these two little like montage-y moments, I it took me out of it for a second, but it's fine. I've forgiven them. But so then they're having this conversation and around them, the FBI is sweeping for bugs. And then one of them says that it's all clear and there's no bugs in the house. So then we cut to the crime scene where the girl was kidnapped and I was like, holy shit, there's a dead girl lying in the middle of the road. So I was like, oh my god, there's a they found a dead body, because it's just a fucking girl lying in the middle of the road. And I was like, oh shit, he's killed her and placed the body where he kidnapped her. And then Elle and Morgan go over to another FBI agent and ask what she's doing, and I was like, what are they talking about? Because I still thought it was a dead body. And then the agent says, oh, she's lying on the road to get a feel for her sister. And I was like, oh, it's the twin. Yes. And it's an alive person. Okay, fine. So I was like, this was a very confusing moment. So then the agent says that the girl who's lying in the middle of the road, Cheryl, that she's been dodging her protection since she was a teen and that she's like a little bit odd. They approach her and she's like, I'm lying here for a reason. She's a little dramatic. Then she sits up and she says that she was dragged, her sister was dragged from the car and that she fell. And then she tells them that her sister is a fighter and she knows that she's alive. She says she can like feel what's bothering her sister from like 1,000 miles away when she's at college. So she knows that she's still alive.
Yeah.
So at this point in the show, I was like, oh shit, has she like killed her sister? Or did this something? I thought it was like... I thought I wrote, "Was it? Is it the old twin switcheroo?" And I was like, "I think at this point, one twin has killed the other and is trying to like pretend to be her and like be her, take her
your
life."
Your mind goes into some interesting tangents, doesn't it?
I thought we were going to get a big twist, but we don't.
No.
So then we go back to the Davenports' home. That's their last name. So the Davenports' home, the father, Evan Davenport, he explains that the girls are mirror twins and he hands Reed a book. And then Reed is like scanning the book. And it turns out, here's another tongue twister, Reed reads real fast. Which is, again, this was another reason I liked this episode in particular, because I felt like it was back to like when we found out that Reed was a genius. Okay. In episode one, he's like doing his little quips and then he's like, yes, I read this first.
I have a note on that.
Oh my god, notes, go.
Let me just open up my laptop. Oh, here, one here moment, we go. Please. Because I got interested in that. Obviously I know he reads real fast. But so does it say, have you written down how fast he reads?
Oh, he says something about the unconscious mind can read 1,000 bits per minute or something like that.
Well, so I'm wondering when we actually learn his exact words per minute that he can read, but I'm not sure if we have yet or not. Either way, this isn't really a spoiler. So according to the show, Spencer Reed can read at 20,000 words per minute, okay?
Jesus Christ.
So I googled if it is possible for anyone to actually read that fast.
Yeah.
And to be honest, there wasn't much of valid sources coming up. But yeah, there was a lot of like Quora posts or Reddit posts coming up. So I just got a little snippet where this was according to a post on Quora. The world speed reading record is currently held by Anne Jones.
Good for her.
Who reads 4,700 words per minute.
Oh.
With a comprehension level of 67%.
Oh, okay.
Even with extensive training, it is unlikely that someone could reach 20,000 words per minute with full comprehension.
Right.
So that's quite interesting, because I didn't do any more research, but it kind of tells me all what we need to know is that, yes, people can speed read, but they're not necessarily taking it all in.
But then what's the point?
Well, because it's like if you're skimming something to get to try and find what you need.
Yeah, you need.
So like that's like a study.
He's control F in it.
He's control F in his mind. For the listeners, he did a little click and a point.
I tell you what he's doing right there.
She had an aha moment.
He is a human control F.
He control left him. Fine. So that's the thing, is that's just like one way that you can tell, you know, it's a fictional show. They've dramatized just how quickly he can read.
He's definitely not that much of a genius. That would be like some, and that would be like subhuman.
We should see how fast superhuman is. That
superhuman. What is that? What are you going to think of?
We should see how fast that the Big Bang Theory claims Sheldon Cooper can read.
Do you want to Google that right now?
Nah, that's future us's thing.
Well, yeah, so Reed reads real fast. And I really like that little moment. So the dad speculates that the unsub is someone he has prosecuted because he says, oh, I have money, but I'm not that rich.
Yeah.
So it's like the motive can't be like money. He thinks it's like revenge. And then Gideon says, well, every case is different. And I was like, what's your point?
Yeah. That literally means nothing in this context.
I know. It's like, because I mean, you were there in the third rewatch. I like skipped back because I was like, what does Gideon say? Oh, he says nothing. Yeah, I was like, okay, fine.
He says nothing.
Thanks, Gideon.
Because I came in the room just as you had skipped back to that bit and I literally sat down as he said it and I went, that means nothing, Gideon.
I know. It's like, yeah, agreed. Okay, that was weird. I feel like Gideon is like, he's always just got to say something, you know?
It's the way that Mandy Patinkin says it to sound profound.
Yeah, I know. Every case is different. Maybe he just read the line wrong. maybe he was supposed to be like, well, every case is different, I guess. Right, so then we cut back to the crime scene. Elle and Cheryl, the twin, are watching Morgan. He's sort of like pacing around in the bushes. And Elle tells her that Morgan is role-playing and he's trying to get a sense of the killer's behavior, which is what I wrote in his, like, Morgan's profile is like, that's his special skill. So Morgan says that she was rarely without her boyfriend, so the killer must have known he would have to take him out, and he speculates that that means he was just collateral damage. But then he realizes that he took a shot to the face, which seems very personal, so he actually thinks he killed the boyfriend to specifically get to her. So then we cut back to the Davenport's house. They're expecting a call, and Reed is explaining what a mute button does. I guess this was before everyone had an iPhone with a mute button.
2005.
So he's like, if you press this button, he can hear you, but not everyone else in the room. No, that's wrong. It means he can't hear everyone.
He can't hear us.
So I was like, otherwise known as a mute button. Turns out I don't know how it works either. So then, where I've lost my place. Morgan thinks that, well, Morgan is saying that he thinks Cheryl is a whack job for thinking that she can, like, feel her sister's mood from a million miles away. But Reed says that actually there might be a scientific reason and that there's speculation that that is a thing with twins.
I believe it.
I do too, actually. Like, intuition is like, I just think everyone has a bit of intuition and it's just a thing you can't explain.
100%.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, I can't say this happened to me personally, but
it's instinct, right?
One of my best friends, she has, like, I've been with her before. They're not twins, but she's just been like, oh, I just need to call my sister quickly, out of the blue, and, like, called her sister, and her sister's been, like, really upset. She's like, is everything okay? And she's like, no, here's whatever's happened. And afterwards, I was like, were you planning to call her? And she's like, no, I just felt like I needed to call my sister.
Oh, my God.
And has called her, and her sister's been upset.
That's crazy.
I also used to date an identical twin, and I can tell you for a fact that they definitely have, like, a different connection.
Yeah.
They 100% finish each other's sentences.
So cool.
Like, they are thinking the same thing at the same time all the time.
Oh my god, I love it.
It's madness.
My friend just had identical twins, and I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, keep me
updated.
Currently
they're like 4 months old.
Yeah, but so, by the time we finish recording this entire series of our podcast forever, they will be 15.
Oh my Christ.
We can keep the listeners updated on the identical twin.
We'll let you know.
We'll forget.
Yeah, no, that would be invasive to their privacy. They haven't agreed to that.
this is not a podcast on these twins.
They do not consent. So they have a little bit of, like, group witty banter. Morgan says that Reed knows everything, and they all have a good laugh. Then they all go into the living room where they're waiting for the call. Gideon is kind of talking Evan Davenport through, like, what he should do. He tells him to keep his voice calm and just to agree with everything the kidnapper says. We can hear the clock ticking, quite, like, you can hear the clock ticking sort of throughout these phone call scenes, and I thought it was quite effective.
That's interesting, I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, you can just hear it, like, tick 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 in the background. So they're watching the clock, but the call is late, and then suddenly the phone rings. As the phone is ringing, before they pick it up, Gideon tells him to just, like, repeat all the information he says to make sure that they, like, they get a record of it, and just to keep him talking. So Evan answers the phone. He tries to question the unsub, but straight away the unsub says he won't talk to him and he only wants to talk to Cheryl.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly everyone gets all tense. Gideon mutes them, and then he says that they should not put Cheryl on the phone. They don't like that and it seems a bit weird. But the unsub, because we can still hear his voice, he insists. Elle thinks it's a good idea and that she might be able to get some information on where Patricia is. But Gideon is, like, firmly against it. And then instead, Gideon gets Elle to pretend to be Cheryl. And, like, no. Elle gets all, like, method.
No.
And she pulls this face that I was like, oh. And she's like, this is Cheryl. And she, like, does these little eyebrows and a little pout. And I was like, you're not on a sex phone line. Stop being so sexy. Elle can't help but be sexy. Let's face it. I might cut that.
No, I can keep it in. I just disagree.
I don't think she's sexy, but do you know what I mean? She's like trying to be sexy.
That's what you meant. You meant that you thought...
She's sexy.
Not like you were sexually attracted to her, just like...
such a disgusted look. No, actually,
I did... established that you like Al more than I like Al, so...
I actually liked her less in this episode. She started to annoy me a bit. Also, I don't like her new hair. She straightened her hair and I don't think it suits her, quite frankly.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
She had more of a blowout going on before and I preferred it. And now she's straightened it. She's changing her look.
Everything she does, I'm just like, stop.
Yeah. She had a lot of irritating facial expressions in this episode.
Yeah, well.
Get used to those.
Yeah.
Hey, poker face. Right, so then, so she pretends to be Cheryl, but the unsub doesn't buy it. He gets angry and he says they have 60 seconds to put Cheryl on the phone. So then they mute and they get Cheryl over. Elle tries to give her, like, rushed instructions. She tells her to use Patricia's name to try and make him empathize and to humanize Patricia. And she's saying all this while the unsub is counting down. And I swear to God, seconds in TV shows are very different. I didn't actually count along. I should have done that.
Yeah,
but it felt like a very long 60
longer,
seconds.
Yeah.
So then Cheryl answers the phone, and his tone immediately changes. He says that he can tell that she cares and he empathizes with her, and he starts to be really creepy. She asks him what he wants. He starts to be creepy. He asks her to tell him what she wants, and he's like, tell me what you want. And she's like, I want to speak to my sister. Mm. And then he's like, what's your favorite color? It's really creepy. He's being really creepy. And then when he asks what her favorite color is, Elle mutes and says to not answer it. She says to keep talking about her sister. So she asks again to speak to her sister. He says he will let her if she tells him her favorite color. So she says her favorite color is blue. He then asks if she likes chocolate. Again, it's so he's like, do you like chocolate? It's really creepy.
Smeagol.
I know. Precious. He gets real creepy. Then she says yes, as I didn't write down. I didn't write down her answer, but either way, he puts Patricia on the phone. And Patricia sounds, I can't say the word, Patricia.
You can't, just say Trish.
I keep trying to put an extra R in there. Patricia.
Just say Trish, Eve.
Trish. So Trish comes on the phone. She sounds dazed. Cheryl asks what she can see and she says the moon. Then he takes her off the phone and he says I'm owed $500,000 and he'll call back in 15 minutes with instructions. And then he hangs up. Immediately Reed says he couldn't trace the call, which is frankly disappointing. It's the FBI. They say it sounds like Patricia was drugged and she sounded all dazed. Gideon asks if they have definitely checked out all of Davenport's staff, because obviously something to Gideon isn't seeming right. Morgan points out that she wasn't blindfolded because she said what she could see, which means that she's seen his face and that it's highly likely that he will kill her.
Mm.
Okay, I have to say, starting to like Morgan, to see Morgan really came into his special skills in this episode.
Okay.
They were like going to him and being like, so what does this mean? And he was like, you know, this means this.
Yeah.
And he like had knowledge.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. Finally starting to warm towards Morgan's special
Brilliant.
Skills.
I like to hear it.
Yeah, I actually thought he was very on it. So, yeah, they discuss the fact that he said he was owed the money, but that he was calmest when he was talking to Cheryl. So he wasn't, like, demanding money. He was just... He sort of said... Do you know what? I'm a little confused what they were saying.
Okay.
I guess he was like, this is what I'm owed. I think he said, this is what I'm owed. Mm-hmm. And then he was all calm when he's talking to Cheryl. So basically, they're thinking something just doesn't feel right and that it doesn't feel like it's about money. Doesn't seem like a normal ransom.
Yeah.
So then, trying to keep up. This was slower, this episode.
It was at a better pace.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
I found I was able to type along. I barely had to pause in the third watch.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so good. I was happy. So Elle goes into the kitchen and she catches Cheryl pouring a glass of wine and she takes it off her, which I think is harsh. I was desperate for a glass of wine. Cheryl basically, she asks Elle how she can stomach doing her job, and Elle says that the men that she helps catch are cowards and she likes putting them away. And she just tells Cheryl that she needs to like keep calm and they'll get her sister back. So he calls back, the unsub calls back. He says that he wants everything to be done by Cheryl. He wants her to pick up the money, pack it, make the drop off, and that she isn't allowed to be followed. They can't use a lookalike, or he'll know and he'll kill Trish. He says that the drop needs to happen at 3 a.m. So Hotch says that they can't send anyone with her, but they'll use a car to follow her with tinted windows, an unmarked car. And I was like, that's obvious. So obvious. It's
obvious.
An unmarked car with tinted windows. You may as well go in like a taxi or a minivan. Like, just, do you know what I mean?
I just don't think there's ever been any sort of ransom drop case where the FBI haven't actually followed.
I know. And
they're obviously going to follow the person in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, it felt a bit of a weird... The plan...
It was loose.
So Davenport obviously is freaking out because he's worried about losing his second daughter.
Of course.
So then we cut to Cheryl driving in her car. Reed is tracking her through a GPS that's attached to her car. Mm-hmm. So now, this was my second speculation. What?
Oh no, carry on.
Okay, so now I'm speculating that actually what's happening is that she's working with somebody to get money out of her father, and that they're using her sister as leverage. So I'm speculating that she is pretending to be all scared and freaked out, and actually she's got the money, she's going to meet the guy and run away with the guy, and they want the money together. A bit of a Fargo situation, do you know?
Have any of your previous speculations turned out to be correct?
No, they haven't, Claire.
Okay, we're waiting for the day.
I think part of the problem is that I'm overthinking.
Yeah, maybe. You're waiting for a big twist.
I am. And they so far have been quite little twists. I think it's because
it was quite linear. A ransom episode.
Yeah. I think it's because the twist is within each episode. I'm waiting for like something major that's like an overarching story kind of thing. So but they're a little bit more, they're kind of like smaller storylines than that. So anyway, so that was my speculation, but I was incorrect. Anyway, so yeah, Reed knows that she stopped at a car rental lot because of the GPS. And Morgan and Hotch are sitting in the car. Morgan speculates that the unsub is going to make her switch cars and leave her cell phone behind so they can't track her. Then he'll make her drive around in the new car and then make the drop somewhere else. You seem exasperated.
I'm just like, why are they having this conversation in the car? Why didn't they have this conversation before they...
Yeah.
This is what exasperates me.
Well, no, because they didn't know she was going to a rental lot. So that's the point.
No, Morgan absolutely knew. Because he says to Reed, he was like... Because Reed says, we can track Cheryl's car, it's got GPS, and Morgan's first response is, well, he's going to make her switch cars, Reed. That's a knowing response. And then he goes, what's the address, where's he taking her to? And Reed goes, rental car lot.
Oh yeah, so it's like they assumed this might happen.
Morgan knew. Yeah. And like, are we up to Morgan and Hotch having this conversation in the car yet?
Then he realizes that something isn't right.
Yeah.
Because he says that the unsub in the ransom demands would have been more specific about like no tracking devices being put in the money and using unmarked bills, and like it would all be about the money.
Yeah.
But it was like really vague. And so he's like, something isn't right. Is this what you're talking about?
This is what I'm talking about. It's the whole thing of time in TV shows, isn't it? Like, I'm thinking too realistically. This is a fictional show. But like, you know, they've had plenty of time from when that demand was made to 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And what have the BAU been chatting about up until that point? I'm just, in my mind, I'm like, why has it taken them to get to just be sitting in the car for Morgan to go, where's all the money demands?
To be fair, Hotch did say in the car, why didn't you say any of this before? And I don't even know if Morgan has a good answer.
Maybe I just didn't pick up on that.
But then I don't know if Morgan had a good answer for that.
Okay, I take back all my gripes because at least they addressed it by Hotch saying that.
Yeah, he's like, excellent. Why didn't you say anything?
Because I know the show needs to get them to being in that car for the sake of dramatic
effect. It's dramatic because then Cheryl's phone rings, she exits the vehicle just as Morgan realises it isn't about the money, he's going to kidnap Cheryl. And then a car comes skidding around the corner, they tell Cheryl to drop to the floor, and then they shoot at the car and it drives away. away. Mm-hmm. So yeah, dramatic moment.
Yeah.
So we cut back to the Davenport's house. Hotch and Morgan return with Cheryl, and then instantly the phone rings. It's the kidnapper. He's angry and he kind of knows Cheryl's now in the room, so he just kind of talks at her and he says, did you feel a thrill? And then he's angry and he says that he wanted to have both of them, a set, a matching pair. She shouts, why are you doing this? And he says, she asked him to. She asked him with her glances.
Oh, it's creepy, isn't it?
It is really creepy. Yeah. I kind of like it. I like this. I was like, oh God, it's getting real intense. Mm. And Morgan, when she talks, Morgan like waves at her to stop talking.
Question mark. Mm. Did you at any point have any speculation on who it was?
No. Okay. I really didn't. Obviously in the second watch, I like noted the person it turns out to be.
Yes.
But no, I didn't do a like episode one vibe where I was like, obviously he's the murderer. No, I didn't do that. Because actually the role that the person plays is really minor. Like yeah. Literally he says like two words, which could easily just be like an extra.
Yeah. But he's referred to throughout the episode. Do you not notice that?
Yeah, yeah. I picked up on that on the third watch.
Yeah.
So, Morgan tries to stop her speaking. The unsub says that he wants her and that they will be together. And then he hangs up. Gideon tells Cheryl not to speak to him again. So now, basically, they kind of profile him, but it's within conversations. So I'm going to reference some of the conversation, but also I've kind of like listed out the profile and then I'll like read out each one.
Okay.
So Reed says that he has a psychosis, and Cheryl reveals that Patricia and her boyfriend were getting engaged. I don't know what getting engaged means.
No, I commented on that as well, didn't I? I'm like, I mean, I know a couple who spoke about getting engaged, like it was, but they had been together for like 12 years.
But like
they were one of those couples that just everything was planned. These are straight out of high school, like they're in university, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they're like 19.
Yeah, they're young, and it's like you're not at this point talking about getting engaged.
Well, but also it's like you're either engaged or you're not. So it's just like, were they engaged or weren't they engaged? They were talking about getting engaged.
Yeah, it's an odd statement. Weird. But I think it was just to like dramatize their relationship, isn't it?
Yeah. So then Gideon speculates that that was the unsub stressor, and the dad seems confused, and Reed explains that he has erotomania, where someone thinks that someone of a higher social status is professing their love through subtle signals.
Mm-hmm.
That's
creepy,
man.
Yeah.
And he thinks that Cheryl and Patricia are in love with him. Gideon says that this means that he's the most determined type of criminal. Again, creepy. Morgan says that they need to check the profile of a stalker against all of Davenport's staff. And so they say to Morgan, okay, so what's the profile of a stalker? So profile of a stalker is narcissistic, an inflated sense of self-worth, history of bad relationships, and then this person is white, male, and he uses sophisticated speech patterns. So we've got psychosis, erotomania, mm-hmm. determined stalker, which has all those things,
yep.
White, male, sophisticated speech patterns, which means that he wants to appear smarter than he is because mm-hmm. he's had to struggle for his position of authority.
Yep.
So that's the profile. We don't get it in quite the same way as we've had it before, where they're like, this is the profile.
Yeah.
But I kind of like that they were mixing it up.
Yeah, I like the conversational style of it.
Yeah. It made it harder for me to write.
Yeah.
this was the point where I did the most pausing, but that's okay. Yeah, so they quietly speculate that Trish might already be dead. Morgan says that he wants to apply pressure to the unsub and make him sweat. So this is quite a long scene. So bear with me because I might get lost in my own notes. Okay. So
we're in.
So the unsub calls again, but Gideon doesn't answer. Davenport tries to answer the phone, but Gideon stops him. Gideon then eventually picks up, but immediately hangs up the phone, and Davenport gets really antsy. Mm-hmm. Then the unsub calls back again. Gideon doesn't answer it for a long time, and Davenport and Cheryl start to get angry. Gideon carries on waiting, and then he finally answers and he speaks, and the guy is pissed and says, he's like furious. And he, I wrote, the guy's pissed. Basically, he's furious. And he shouts that he'll kill Patricia. And then Gideon hangs up again. Davenport at this point is freaking out and Cheryl is crying. But Gideon basically tells him to get a grip. And the phone rings again.
A bit harsh, isn't it? It's like, get a hold of yourself.
Like, get a hold of yourself, man. And it's like, he's literally just said. He said he would rip her open. Yeah. It's like, okay.
He's a bit concerned about his daughter.
Yeah. then Gideon answers the phone. The unsub screams again that he will... Oh, this is when he says, I will rip her open. And Gideon says, so I'm sorry, you must have the wrong number. And then hangs up, which I did find quite funny. Really not the moment, Gideon. Then he hangs up again and Davenport's freaking out, but Gideon tells him that he's going to save his daughter's life and just to have faith. He answers the phone and the unsub is suddenly calm and he asks to speak to Cheryl, but Gideon says that he's done talking to Cheryl. At this point, the unsub starts to like mouth off at Gideon. He references Gideon's tone of authority and says something about his published works. He calls him Jason, so he knows his first name. He then starts spewing personal information about all of the members of the BAU. So he says that Agent Hotchner is ambitious and he wants to be the director of the FBI. He says that it doesn't stop him working even with a sick pregnant wife. So very personal. He calls Dr. Reed autistic and insecure. He says that Elle was promoted too soon and she'll struggle in the boys' club. And Elle's face looks like really upset.
Another good facial expression from Elle there.
She's like, what? Me? No.
I saw it differently. I saw it as her just being like, you do not know what you're talking about.
Oh, no. I read it as like, no, I don't. In that voice.
I saw it as sassy.
Then he calls Morgan Derek Morgan. Ding ding ding, first name.
Ah, yeah, we have Derek's first name. Derek.
Didn't know he was called Derek. That's our granddad's
name. Okay, this is how we know that we haven't heard his first name already.
Yeah, didn't know his first name. So Derek Morgan, I love this moment.
Are we getting one name an episode? That's clever, isn't it?
Okay. See, this is what they're kind of drip feeding the information. So love this moment. He calls Morgan a side of beef and Morgan just laughs. And I was like, yes, Morgan. Really liked Morgan in this episode, which I'm glad about because I like to look at him and I like to like him. So he knows what to do next and he hangs up the phone. Davenport is freaking out again. Cheryl's all crying and Gideon explains that he was just grandstanding and that what he's actually done is it's meant that Gideon has learned more about him in the last 5 minutes than the last 24 hours. Reed explains that unsubs are able to profile people, like they can pick out a victim in a crowded room. But what he's actually done is, Gideon says, they now know how to find him. So when he was like spewing all this information, I realized that they were trying to make it like an aha moment of, okay, it's someone within the inner circle. It's like an agent or like a staff member of the, what is he? The attorney? I kept calling him the senator, but he's not. The attorney, Evan Davenport. But I did think that bit was a little bit heavy handed just in terms of the script writing.
Which bit, sorry?
So when he's like, oh, the autistic Dr. Reed and the Agent Hotchner who wants to be the leader of who has a pregnant wife. So I felt like, I realise he's supposed to be giving himself away, but he's like really giving himself away. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, understandably. Yeah. It's like, no, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like he's trying to play it cool and not let on that he knows exactly who they all are because he works for the FBI.
But isn't the point that like Gideon's goaded him to that?
Yeah, no, I know. But I was just like, he's obviously a bit dumb. But I guess they did say that.
And it's another like script writing way. It's another writer's way of like...
Yeah, moving us along.
Moving us along and also like... really hammering in who the BAU are, like they're really like introducing them, so they're using this unsub to like make hammer in who they are as individuals.
There's two reasons for the scene, but I think, again, we've talked about this, like, a little more used to kind of, like, more subtle script writing.
Okay.
So it was just a little heavy-handed.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, but I didn't not like it. I actually really... I've just loved this episode. Okay, so Davin... So we're kind of, like... So, yeah, we kind of fade to black, obviously an advert break. We come back and Davenport is kind of raging at Gideon, saying that he's like, he might have killed his daughter by doing that. And I'm calling him unnamed agent comes over and calms Davenport down and kind of takes him away. So the BAU gang are talking and they're speculating that it's someone within the inner circle, like an FBI agent, who knows the Davenports and has worked for them. Garcia here gets a mention, but is absent from this episode, correct, as well, along with JJ.
Yeah.
So they both do not appear in this episode, which I found quite surprising, actually. But to be honest, it was a relief because I don't like Garcia. Stop my fucking head in. So I was like, oh, great. Okay, she's not here. Maybe that's why I liked it.
That's why you like the episode so much.
yeah, so they discuss... the danger of that, and Hotch really wants to get Cheryl to a safe house and just limit the number of agents that she comes into contact with. So Elle and Morgan and the unnamed agent go to the safe house. Maybe he has been named, but I just hadn't picked up on it.
I'm trying to think of who it is. I think it's just a random...
He's the guy. Oh, the unsub.
Yep, yeah, yeah, got you. Cool.
No spoilers or anything, but I can't remember his name. I didn't pick up on his name.
Oh, I did get his name, but now the name Davenport's just in my mind. Yeah, and it's not that.
It's not that.
But no, I did pick up on it throughout the episode.
Was
it
like
Strife? No.
Stripe?
No.
Okay, I don't know. I didn't write down. Anyway, so the three of them go to the safe house with Cheryl. Then, again, this is like the cutting back and forth, which we love to do. So Davenport then is apologizing to Gideon for freaking out, but Gideon's very understanding and Davenport just wants to know that the safe house is going to be okay. We cut back to the safe house. Elle is on the phone to Reed. She's asking about the bug sweep that happened and she references non-local interaction,
yeah,
which seems like a wordy way of saying, like, somebody was listening in. I don't know.
And also, like, she asks, Reed, have you heard of non-local interaction?
Of course he has. He's a genius, Elle.
And then it just doesn't get picked up again.
Yeah, very strange.
Yeah.
She says, no. So she says, basically, she's like, how can he be holding Trish prisoner and listening into what they're saying? I would also like to ask this, because when he's literally freaking out in the scene where Gideon is, like, hanging up the phone and picking it back up and hanging it back up, he appears moments after that. Because Davenport's freaking out. Sorry, spoilers. Now we know who the unsub is, or we are about to learn who the unsub is. He appears moments after that scene to calm Davenport down. So he must have been in the next room making that angry phone call, which I feel is a slight plot hole.
I think you're right. And
because there must still be FBI agents
outside
all over the house
making the phone call. Yeah. So he's somewhere very close.
Yeah.
Making that phone call and then has ran in because he knew that Davenport was freaking out. Mm-hmm. We don't see how far away the safe house is from the
or
house,
the storage
we?
Container. This guy, yeah, again, whatever. Basically, I'm like jumping. Sorry, I hit my microphone. But basically, this guy has managed to travel
a lot yeah,
during this episode.
So
this
it must crime. Be close.
Yeah, I mean, it all must be within a short distance.
Oh, no, yeah, in my mind, the safe house is also where he was keeping Trish, but it's not. That's a different location.
No, yeah, it's like a storage
We don't
yard.
Actually find where that location... I think it's irrelevant.
But then there was the bag drop, but then I guess they all had... Anyway, whatever. It just seems like he moved quickly, this guy. But I guess he knows what he's doing. I've lost my place. Yes. Oh, yeah, so she asks... Yeah, so she asks how he can be holding Trish prisoner, but also hearing what they're saying. So we cut back to the safe house. Morgan is, like, washing his face. And I realise they must have a lack of sleep, this team. Like, when they're doing these, like, intense periods of, like, gotta find the victim, it's like, they must be really fucking tired.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it, quite frankly.
I got all this adrenaline.
Yeah, that's
true. The thrill of the chase.
That's true. I guess it's only been one night. But then they had to travel on the Concorde.
The Concorde?
I don't even know if it is a Concorde, you know? I just like to call it the Concorde. And I'm going to carry on calling it the Concorde.
Okay.
So yeah, we're back at the house. They've found a listening device inside all the FBI equipment. They call Morgan, but he's lying unconscious on the ground.
Oh, no.
So obviously in the process of washing his face, he fell asleep because he's so tired. Then Gideon asks Davenport about the one specific agent. Again, I didn't hear the name, I apologize. But he's basically asking how long he's worked for them, and that particular agent has worked with him and the girls for a long time. Then we cut back to the house and said creepy...
Vincent Shire is his name.
Vincent Shire? How did you pick up on that? You're just on it.
I'm just on it. Yeah. Also, I had to look it up for the processes of my research, so I've remembered it. Okay. I was thinking about it in the background because I was like, surely I know this name. Yeah, no, Vincent Shire.
Vincent Shire, okay. So then we see Vincent Shire entering the bedroom where Cheryl is in the safe house. He says that he knows her and her sister and he loves them both. He's being real creepy. Charles starts to freak out. He pulls out a knife and he's approaching her. And then Elle comes in behind him with a gun. I don't know why he didn't take Elle out. Because he obviously...
This gets mentioned later.
Yes, it does. Yeah, Penny just dropped, actually. Yes. Okay, so then Elle comes in behind him with a gun. She tells him to drop the knife. He turns around. And then they have this like kind of ridiculous tussle where... He tries to hit the gun away. I don't know why she doesn't just shoot him.
I think there is a level of liability on the police to, like, unless you're... We've seen Elle kill
an unsub before. She shot fucking Tiny Tim in episode one.
Yeah, but he'd already shot Gideon.
Yeah, that's true.
So he'd already opened fire. So yeah. I think they do keep it to, like, unless they're about to start shooting you and your life isn't... I know, like, her life is in danger, technically, but she could fight her way out.
All right.
Also, they still need to know where Trish is.
Agreed. Okay, yeah, fine. So, yeah, they have a kind of tussle. He hits the gun away. Elle gets him to the ground. And she, like, stands on his crotch.
Yeah.
And, like, gives him this, like, intense look. And I didn't like it. Again, didn't like this facial expression. And then she asks where Patricia is. And then we cut to a kind of, like, industrial estate storage yard where where they found Patricia and they're, like, wheeling her out on a stretcher. The whole Davenport family climb into the back of the ambulance and there's kind of this nice moment where they're all, like, looking at each other. And then Reed asks Gideon how Elle got the information out of the unsub. And Gideon says she found a creative way to persuade him. And Reed's like, but how? And Gideon's like... leave it. So it's like he doesn't want to tell Reed that she's what, stamped on his crotch.
I think Reed will just continue to ask questions.
But like I mean I don't know what
it was. An odd moment. Yeah,
I think they were trying to be like, Elle's really cool because she like kicks people in the dick. I don't know. I was like, I'm quite frankly unimpressed with Elle, so I turned on her in this episode. I've really flipped on Ellen Morgan.
Flipped on Ellen Morgan.
That wasn't your influence, I promise. So we cut back to the BAU. Morgan is changing a dressing on his side.
Shirt is right up.
Whew. We see his smoking bod. And I was like, okay, confirmed, he is hot.
He is a hottie.
Yeah. And he's got like, it's like two, kind of like a vampire bite.
Vampire bite. I was going to say snake bite.
Yeah, snake bite. Vampire bite. And Elle comes over because she wants, you know, she wants to have a little look.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
She asks if he was
convenient
all...
timing.
Yeah.
Oh, you okay? Do you need me to help you with that dressing?
Hello, this is Cheryl.
This is Cheryl.
So she asks if he's okay and references that he took a taser hit, which, fuck, that must have hurt.
Yeah, mate.
To knock him out as well. Ugh. And then she says that he doesn't need to finish working. This is where he says that Vincent Shire underestimated her and he didn't see her as a threat and that was his mistake. So yeah, that's why he didn't knock her out. They have this kind of like flirty moment.
Well, I just want to say as well, I think it's important to note that he says doesn't see you as an equal or a threat.
And
this goes back to the erotomania thing, is picking up who, like, so he's got erotomania, right? So he thinks that he sees himself as equal to these two girls in social status.
Of like a higher status.
Yeah, but they're of, well, quote unquote, higher social status.
Right.
So then it's just kind of like a little nod to the whole theme of the episode is who's your equal?
Yeah.
Who's got the power? Who's important?
Nice. Okay. Great picking up on the theme, because I did not pick up on that. She concentrate more. Yeah, they have a kind of like flirty moment. She offers to help him with his work, and he like gives her half the files, and then she gives one back as like a, I guess, a power play. But yeah, I guess the group, well, I'm kind of satisfied with Reed and JJ being the will they won't they, but I guess we're gonna get an Elle and Morgan will they won't they potentially. But anyway, they both sit down at their desks, and we end on a hopeful note, as we tend to do in this show, and yeah, we fade to black. End of episode. Yeah, I really liked the episode.
Good. Yeah, no, I like it too.
Yeah, good it one. Was good pace. It slowed it down a bit. I was able to keep up for the most part. I mean, it sounds like I missed some stuff, but a little bit. but yeah, we learned a few new things. I've copied and pasted my character profiles.
Excellent.
And then I've put in bright pink the new information. So
thank you for telling everyone your organizational system.
And my font is Montserrat. No, sorry, Nonito.
How did you get that wrong?
Oh, Montserrat is my work font. I didn't have it. I couldn't see it. I panicked. I made it up. It was actually.
I was like, what are you reading?
It's Nonito. It's Nonito, okay? yeah. So, right. So, Jason Gideon, we haven't learned anything new about in this episode. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think I learned anything. Hotch. So, I put this in his weakness section, which was previously blank. I think his weakness is his wife. So, he's shown emotions for the first time, and okay, it was all to do with his wife. Also, the guy referenced basically he was saying he doesn't have any work-life balance because he wouldn't even leave work for his sick pregnant wife. So I have a feeling, I don't want to look at you when I say
okay,
this, but I am putting on the record and speculating that end of season, oh god, I really don't want to say this because I don't want to see
I'm
your
hiding
face.
My face. I'm okay, hiding my face.
This is my prediction that one of the later episodes, I think Hotch's wife is going to be kidnapped and we are going to see a whole new side of Hotch. Okay, boom. Don't say anything. Right, we're moving on. I'm going to move on. Right, so Elle, we learned one of her weaknesses. I put that she has a slight imposter syndrome because the guy was talking about how she like doesn't fit in with the boys club, and she kind of, well, you thought she had a sassy face, but I thought she had a kind of like, no, like defensive face. So I'm speculating that her weakness is like a bit of imposter syndrome, because also like he didn't see her as a threat, and she's kind of trying to like show herself as like being capable, I guess. So then Reed, we learned, is a Dr. Reed, and that he can read real fast.
It's really interesting to me learning when you learn all these things, like Dr. Reed.
Is he just always called Dr. Reed from now on?
Yeah, or, that's not even a spoiler. Forever.
He's now Dr. Reed.
I
swear he's always just been Reed.
That's really, it's just, you're absolutely right. I don't disbelieve you. I'm just like, it's really interesting to me. We're learning these things first hand. Because I didn't pick up on that at all, because obviously I hear them say Dr. Reed.
Already.
So in my mind, I'm just used to him being called.
It really stood out to me.
Interesting.
So then Morgan is Derek Morgan. Mm-hmm. So we knew that.
I'm liking this whole first name. Have we got all their first names yet?
Not Hotch.
We don't have Hotch.
Hotch
okay.
is remaining. So we've got Jason Gideon.
Yep.
Elle Greenaway.
Yep.
Dr. Spencer Reed.
And with Elle, didn't we learn her first name before we learned her second name? Yeah. So that's an interesting, because she's the only female that's part of that. She's the only like fighting agent of the BAU.
Yeah. So Dr. Spencer Reed, Derek Morgan, Jennifer Giroux. God, I can't get Giroux out of my head. Jennifer Giroux and Penelope Garcia. So we're still waiting on Hotch.
It's just Hotch that we're waiting for. Okay, so hopefully in episode 6 we'll get Hotch's name.
So, sorry, finally under Morgan I put Derek Morgan, new first name, and confirmed hot bod. Under special skills. And that's it.
Oh, okay. Nice, yeah. Good episode.
Good, really good episode. Really enjoyed
I'm really enjoying your table of like what we're learning each episode.
Profiles,
I'm wondering how long that's going to keep going before it gets to a point where like we're not learning new stuff anymore. It's just, I'm just curious in my mind.
I'll, I'll, I think I'll call it when it's a full fleshed out characters.
I think what I might start doing is on the socials, putting each week, I'll put your new updated little graph.
I'm just looking what's missing information. So Gideon, we don't have an age, and we have no information under personal life. So that needs to be filled in.
I need to see your table. I've not actually looked at this.
Yeah, you can look at it.
Yeah.
Hutch, no first name. And age unknown, actually. Don't know his age. Elle, don't know her age. And know very nothing about her personal life. Because we've only seen her at work.
Find out all their ages. I'm not sure if it's really that relevant.
Yeah.
Well, we'll figure out if by the end of the season you have a blank column, then we'll just dismiss that.
Maybe it was only relevant because we learned that Reed was 24.
It might have been, yeah.
So then I put a section for his age and then I added age to everyone else. But that's fine. Maybe we can scrap the age thing. But personal life, definitely. We don't know anything about Gideon. We don't know anything about Elle. And or Reed, actually. Under personal life, I put that he fancies JJ, but that's it.
Yeah, okay.
So I kind of want to see like where they live, you know?
Aww.
Does Reed still live with his parents? We don't know. we don't know much about Morgan's personal life. JJ is a fan of the Redskins. And I don't really give a fuck about Penelope Garcia. Sorry, love. So we'll find out.
Yeah.
Right.
More to come.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a wrap, guys.
Yeah, we'll be back for episode 6. Do you have the name of episode 6? I don't.
Do you mean... the show episode 6.
Oh my god, yes, not our episode.
Because we'll be back with 5.2 when I do my...
Oh, she was so calm.
She was very calm. Sorry, the door just went and the dog didn't bark.
Yeah,
when I do my research, when I tell you all about the true crime that inspired Broken Mirror.
Broken Mirror. But what's the name of the next episode of the series?
LDSK.
LDSK.
Yep.
The letters.
Yep. It's an acronym.
LDSK. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very interested to find out what that stands out for. So join us in 2 weeks. Maybe you'll learn. But we will be back next week with Claire's research. So bye.
Bye.